Session number 9956.
Michael Owen, Reel 10. Just to clear up one point, the cigarettes that you'd taken ashore, they were for your own and your friend's consumption up at Varbel.
Absolutely. There was no question of flogging the cigarettes in. No. That was not for personal gain at all. I always blamed it on my friend who lives close to where I live, that he rang me up and said, what about some cigarettes? But I don't think that happened. No question of that at all.
Right, so you were in this quandary and they didn't know quite what to do with you. So how was that resolved?
Well, Commander Golding, who'd got a DSO at Dieppe and RNR, liked him very much. He was very annoyed with this man Hastings and with the way in which I'd been treated. And so he arranged. I told him, one knew that the invasion was about to come. I said, for God's sake, send me back. I must be in on the base. I'm not going to be left out in the blue on this. So he arranged for me to go back to the flotilla, which was the 591 LCA hedgerow flotilla. Now, in my absence, the flotilla officer that I knew personally and had gone through North Africa, Sicily, and eventually, so we say, he got into Salerno, he had a sub-Lieutenant Kirby. And let me put it this way. There were 9 craft in one section, so we call it G1, and there were 9 LCAs in another section, call it G2. Now, Wallace was the overall commander. He was the flotilla officer. He was lieutenant. I was lieutenant. And he looked after G2. Kirby, who joined not so long before, he was G1. And he had command of that. Now, they'd done their exercises. We'll come to what they had to do in a minute, off Studland Bay. So the object, these landing craft assault, were the ordinary landing craft assault, which carried troops, 20 or 30 troops, for the actual assault on a beach. Now, these landing craft were now fitted with 24 60-pound spigot bombs. And the object was to blow up the beach obstacles at half tide, because we went in at half tide, and as you know, Rommel had these beach obstacles all along the Normand, all along the western the defences, and these were in form of tetrahedrals. There were mines on top of steel posts. There were shells on top of steel posts, and our object was to blow these up so that it would leave a passage clear for the LCTs carrying armoured vehicle Royal Engineers, that is tanks, with flails, so that first of all we would go in at H minus 1 minute, there'd be nobody off the beach. Then in would go the flail tank, which would clear the mines, any mines that are left, and then in would go the troops. Now, to be fair, the DD tanks, duplex drive tanks, these were the swimming tanks, should really have gone in first, but as it turned out, the weather and most of they didn't go in first. So we'll come back to this. So there was an officer in each landing craft, a sub-lieutenant, and there were 3 ratings. In total, for Gold Area, there were 18 landing crafts split up with G1 and G2.
How big were the crafts?
Oh, they were just the ordinary landing craft assault. What, 30 feet, if that? You've seen pictures of this.
Just the 3 or 4 aboard?
Yes, the 3 of us with these spigot bombs. And they were so small, we were towed across. We were the smallest landing craft to go across the channel. And when you hear about these landing craft that were lowered 7 miles off the beach, they only had 7 miles. We had 100-something other miles to go. And, of course, we lost craft. But if we can sort of...
Well, taking it right from the beginning,
yes,
of the whole operation. So what you set sail...
Well, In the River Hamble, and I'd had no experience of actually firing these things before. You had a ripple switch inside the cockpit. The crew would go into the engine room, which was just a Ford engine, and take security there. The officer would look ahead, and when he got within, say, 20 yards or so, or less than that, of the beach, he would work his ripple switch, and then these spigot bombs would go off and cover, say, 150 yards or so. I have all the details somewhere here.
How did they work?
Put the ripple switch.
Was a ripple switch?
You would start the electrical. You'd press a button. The electrics would work from the battery towards the underneath of these spigot bombs, 60-pound spigot bombs. And when you made a turn of the handle, it would start it off, and there these bombs would just rocket forward like rocket bombs and fall on the beach.
How far forward would they fire approximately?
That's a question. I would say, 150 yards or something like that? I would think something like that, 150, 200 yards.
You did have some training in this before you went, did you?
I had none.
None at all?
None. But I was, because I'd had, to put it this way, the experience of commanding a flotilla of nine, I was put in charge. And it was unfortunate for Kirby, because Kirby went with Wallace in the actual operation. And I'm sad to say that they didn't get one craft there. I got, out of nine, I got six. But we come back to that.
So you were put in charge of the whole flotilla, G1 and G2?
I was put in charge of G1, and the Sub-Lieutenant Kirby went with Wallace, who in operation had command of G2.
Now, I noticed there were none of the LCMSs.
Involved. No. They were by then the Royal Marines had taken over, and they were totally Royal Marine controlled. I had nothing further to do with.
Were they still involved? Were they?
They were involved in the invasion. Yes. As to what they did, I have no clue. But Hampton, I know, was in my friend there, Corporal. He was in Normandy. But as to what they did, I don't know.
How were you to communicate with your nine?
You couldn't. There was no means at all, because what happened was we were secured astern of the LCTs, which carried the tanks, the LCF, which was landing craft flak. They had anti-aircraft LCTs with anti-aircraft or landing craft gun, which had a gun inside to blow up anything ashore. We took our position in the Solent astern of these larger craft, and we ate on board just for that one night. And I remember when we were about to depart, an army officer came alongside and he gave us what are called sticky bombs. Which is quite absurd, and he asked us to put these on top of the beach obstacles, where you had the shell or where you had the telamine, to stick them on top and to get away and blow them up, which was absolutely crazy. We had no instruction at all on this sort of thing. This sapper, he came along and said, do this, you see. Well, we sailed, would it be June the 4th? Yes, morning of June the 4th, because the invasion should have taken place on June the 5th. And I think we got as far as the Needles when the order was given to turn back because of the weather. You know, Eisenhower, I remember, cancelled the operation for one day. So we had another night in the Solent. And then the following morning we proceeded to sea. The weather was very rough at the time, and we had a very difficult crossing. The night came, and during the night, One officer turned back. One of my officers turned back. I refused to believe it was cowardice. I don't know what happened. They say that he got some wire around his propeller, but he turned back near the needles, which was...
How were you all attached to the LCTs?
By a towing rope. And I reckon...
In what formation? What?
In line astern.
You had the rope from the LCT to, say, your craft.
Yes, that's right. You had your LCT, the towing rope to myself, then you had another LCT, another towing rope. So,
So it was only one per LCT.
Yes. And we had absolutely nothing to eat. There was no eats going across because the weather was so bad and you couldn't pass. The object was to have passed food from the LCT to us, but of course you couldn't. Now, I reckon I survived through knowledge of having been in the Navy for as long as I had, because what I did was to lengthen the tow of between the LCT and myself so that it would ease the strain on the shackles underneath my LCA. And so what happens, there were two of them, had obviously no experience in this, because one of them, Sub-Lieutenant Knott, he just bought a new Kapok life jacket, and he was, in my opinion, a bit old to have gone on the job. He was towed under. In other words, he was too taut, he was too close, in my opinion, and they were all drowned, the four of them, during the night.
What do you mean by towed under, Keith?
Well, when I say towed under, the towing shackles underneath. He was probably too close, in my view, to the LCT, and the strain on the shackles was such that they were pulled out, and the water just came straight in to the LCA, and they were never seen again. That happened to two craft, but that was very sad, their lack of experience.
So, of your nine, two were towed under.
Were towed under. That's right.
One returned. Now you sounded sceptical about the propeller excuse. Is there any foundation?
I never checked up. I don't know what happened to him. I would rather sort of tend to think that it did happen. It did have some, maybe his engine trouble or something. I don't know. But
now the other nine, you said that none of
them. Well, there was either two or one. It was either one turned back. No, one turned back. One knot was towed under, and the third was my friend who was killed alongside me, which we've come to.
What about the other group of nine? Because you said
the other
none
group,
of us.
They're not one got there. They were towed under, they were either abandoned, not one got to the place.
That seems to me there's some sort of fundamental design fault there.
Well, I don't know. It could have been that they hadn't had the they certainly may not have had the experience on towing, I don't know. But
had they not been trained and practiced in...
They had, and but the weather, you see, was probably perfect. And the weather in crossing, don't forget that the Derby was won that year, and what was ocean swell first, happy landing second, and Tehran third. It was a hell of an ocean swell. So, no, they probably hadn't had that experience. But during the night... This poor chap, Knott, was certainly, he was lost. But I was lucky because my LCF, which was towing me, broke down in the middle of the night. And fortunately, her engines having broken down, I cast off my tow. And in fact, when we got back to the Hamble, the shackles were not all that good underneath. So maybe as if I'd gone on, been towed, I could have gone under. I'm not an expert, but it could have happened, because the shackles were not particularly tight. So it broke down, fortunately, and this is in the middle of the channel. So I cast off and went on my own steam. And then, of course, I ran out of petrol, so was about to run out of petrol, and the destroyer in the night came alongside, hailed me, and I told him what was happening. And it was a precarious operation because we had these jerry cans, and they filled me up with the petrol sufficient to get me to the place of where the action was to take place. And on that score, This was at the lowering position at 0530, about 7 miles off.
Was there no... it seems to me that you were going to end up there in not terribly good condition after
exactly.
the false alarm,
that's right.
the long night voyage,
that's
no
right.
food,
that's right.
Bad weather.
That's right.
What state were you and your crew in? Because they're the ones you could see.
Well, it's well you mentioned that because it's brought back to mind. It was... we were very depressed during the night because we knew roughly where we were, but we were in the middle of the channel. And it was only when we saw the flak going up at night time in the distance. And, of course, it was our bombers going over, and it was German flak going up. It was a fantastic sight to see the German flak going up. And then you suddenly saw, well, there was only one, and that was like a balloon going down on fire. And that was obviously one of our own aircraft, which was going down. But we were in, I suppose, very happy to know that land was near. At least land was near. We could be, you know...
Did you know about the casualties, the fate
no.
of the others?
No, I didn't at that time. We arrived off the lowering position about 5 miles, 5 to 7 miles. That's the lowering position where the LCAs, the liners, rather, were lowering the LCAs, if you follow. They didn't go until H plus 10 minutes. But also the bombardment position, where the cruisers were bombarding, or they started to, and were bombarding the enemy main positions inland. And they were spread all over the place. There was the Belfast, Diadem, and Orion. This was in Gold area. So as we went past the crews that weren't otherwise engaged in shelling were on the side shelling us, which when then felt a bloody fool for having volunteered for this job, because particularly having been in action, having been in Salerno, I knew and felt there would be a terrible D-Day, Normandy, there would be murder. And that's when I think, when they were cheering, I was really very, very frightened. But saying to myself, why the hell have I got myself to this situation? But, well, you were on your way, so...
What was it you think that kept you going in those circumstances?
Bravado, I suppose. You were on your way, and you had no option. So they lined up abreast with the LCTs in line. I suppose we had half an hour or more there in getting together. The LCTs and my what was left of my... flotilla of nine. I didn't recognize the fact that there were two missing, but on my right was this sub-lieutenant Ashton, who had been in 4 years in war. They'd said to him, would you go home to Australia? He lived in Australia. And he said, no, I want to do this D-Day operation. He was on my right. And we proceeded line abreast with the LCTs with their tanks just astern of us, bearing in mind that we had to put our spigot bombs onto the beach, quick turn to port, and clear the way for the tanks to go in, the landing craft tank. So we then passed these destroyers, the Ulster, Urchin, Undaunted, Ursa, 2.5 miles out. That was the heaviest concentration of bombardment, as I understand it. Now, people have said that you see pictures of D-Day, that shells fell close to our craft. I don't remember that. There may have been one. Possibly I took it
German
to be a...
German shells.
Yes, but I don't remember that. I think it's been a lot of bullshit. There's a brigadier who... Stanier, I think his name is, who signed autographs of a well-known painting done of shells landing by his ships. To my knowledge, I don't remember that, and I think it's
large. So your opinion is that as you made the approach to the beach, you weren't under artillery fire?
In my opinion, we were not under the artillery fire, which has been written about. It's a line of bull, and it's nonsense. Not in Gold area, at any rate.
What about small arms? And
No, there was nothing. There may have been one or two. I I mean, it was a very exciting moment, but I cannot recall. I possibly one or two, but I thought there were false shots. There may have been, but there were nowhere near.
But the small arms fire not?
No, not at that point. Not at that point.
So
no.
You're approaching the beach.
So we approached the beach, and then the crew of the tanks were taking off their camouflage. That is to say, the crew of the AVREs. They're taking off their camouflage and getting ready to follow me, as far as I was concerned. Then, about a mile ahead, a mile before the attack, the crew went into the stokehold. I went into a stokehold, little engine room. I went into the cockpit. And maximum speed. This would be at minus 8-10 minutes, something like that.
You would be steering them?
Yes, yes. And the flotilla was in line, and then behind was this conglomeration of LCTs. And we got within probably 100 yards or so when Bruce and his crew were hit by an LCT. It turned over, and as the water was very shallow, they were drowned. The stoker came out. He came out alive.
As it was shallow, they were drowned.
Oh, very shallow, yes. Because it turned over. They were rammed by the LCT. He must have lost way.
Oh, you mean they were trapped?
They were trapped, yes. It turned over. The LCT turned over, and Bruce Ashton and his crew were lost, which was a bit shattering to me because that was the first casualty, so to speak, and the beach was directly ahead. So then... I would suggest it was H minus 1 minute. At that stage, these destroyers were bombarding inland and coming down towards the beach. And at precisely the moment that we arrived off the beach to do our job, which was, as I say, 20 or 30 yards from the beach, the bombardment lifted. And we let go our spigot bombs. I have pictures of this. We had two that didn't go off. They hadn't the electric. There was electric fault. Two of them didn't go off, and there was a tremendous explosion. I went to port, and then along came this LCT, which beached, and out of the LCT came the flail tank, and the most incredible thing was that there wasn't a shot fired. It was absolute peace, and it was peace for probably a minute or 2 minutes, whilst this is nobody on the beach at all. And then this craft, this tank, waddled up the beach. The flails started operating. There was an explosion as the waterproofing stopped. Waterproofing would blown up because they had to do it. And then there was black smoke out of the tank as it received a direct hit. There wasn't any flames for a moment, but they obviously were all killed inside. And there still wasn't any firing at all.
Had you successfully... we must have done if the tank got through. You'd successfully cleared a gap with the spigot bombs. They had done what they were intended to.
Yes, they had done the job, because the other tank, another tank, went out. I didn't see the other tank, because we were then being fired at, which I'll come to. This was half tide, by the way. The beach obstacles were not under the water by then. I mean, we were the first there. There was a German 88 millimeter gun, I think it was. I don't know if it was 80 millimeter, in a gun emplacement. And it knocked that first tank out. It knocked the second tank out. The third tank knocked out the gun emplacement, which was very fortunate. The gun emplacement was such that you couldn't knock it out from the sea. It was thick concrete. But the gun actually was horizontal to the beach, if you can follow. So, you know, it was very unfortunate. But we, at that stage, I was trying to put these sticky bombs on, but I gave up because they didn't stick to the telemines. And just then, there was a machine gun emplacement which fired at us. These happened to be Poles conscripted into the German army. Poles or Russians, I think they were Poles. And they fired at us. They didn't hit us. We obviously were a bit frightened, but we only had Lewis guns. When up came a landing craft gun and put a shell right on top of the gun emplacement, and I have pictures of this. This was, and knocked it out. And then at about H plus 10 minutes, the 5th Battalion of the East Yorks, maybe in H plus 20, they landed. And one had a first-class view of the actual assault. And all I can recall of that was that these men were hiding under those that got there up to the sea wall. They were hiding under the sea wall. And I recall seeing one man in particular, very not so far away. The tide was taking us down. But one man we ran, and then just like a rabbit, he was shot, obviously, hurt, got up again, and then fell. I focused on this particular man. I don't think that they had some casualties, not all that much, but the Germans were in fact on the top of the seawall tucking grenades down. You couldn't see that, but you could see them hiding under the wall. And by then we thought, well, our job was done.
Was there much fire on the beach? Small arms fire?
Oh, yes, there was quite a lot. But we were lucky in La Riviere, Versailles. They were very, very lucky indeed. They were fortunate.
So that was the end of your involvement?
Well, not completely, because, in fact, what happened was that it took us something like 4 hours to get back, 7 miles. In that time, we lost 2 craft, no casualties. They sank because of the bad weather. It was all right because the wind was in and the waves were in our favour going in, but not coming out. Getting out, I got on board this Empire ship and turned in and got back to, woke up the following morning. I think I turned in probably about 11 morning, or I don't know, 12 or something, and slept till the early hours of the following morning because we'd been without food and so forth. And woke up in the morning to find ourselves in the Hamble. Now, Wallace had told me that on no account was I to go back to Normandy, because he'd been jealous of me in the Salerno effort, and also that I was not to give any of my reports to Captain Balance, who was the Captain RN in charge of the Gold Area. I was to submit my report to him. Well, he and Kirby got onto the beach, and there, in the LCT, their craft had been sunk. They got into the LCT, and their LCT was damaged. He was hit in the toe by a machine gun position whilst talking to an army officer who was killed, and Wallace was therefore hadn't come back 2 days later. I could have gone back, but I didn't. I was in HMS Cricket, the base, and I had made out my report, and I decided that I was going to submit it to this captain of the group, Captain Balance. I think his name was Balance, or was it Benting? Balance. I was going to say when Wallace arrived. And he took this report of mine, and as to what he reported himself, I have no clue. But all I do know is that, and this is again, one can say sour grapes, he got not one craft there. There were 2 DSCs, and one was given to Kirby, and Wallace got the other one, and they hadn't even done the bloody job. So you can say it was sour grapes. I'm sorry to have to say that years later, but this is fact. And I held it against Wallace very much for that, because I thought this was... mind you, I was an usurper. I just arrived at the last minute, so maybe some justification on his part.